You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
The weather today will be mostly cloudy with a high near 42, northeast winds 9 to 11 miles per hour. And tonight, it's rain and sleet, becoming all rain after 4 a.m. The rain could be very heavy at times, a low around 35, east winds 9 to 14 miles an hour, and the chance of precipitation is 100%. New sleet accumulation of less than a half inch is possible. Tuesday will be rain before 7 a.m., then showers mainly between 7 a.m. and 4 p.m. The rain again could be heavy at times, with the high near 48. East winds 6 to 11 miles per hour, becoming light and variable in the morning, and the chance of precipitation is again 100%. New precipitation amounts between a quarter and a half an inch is possible. Tuesday night will be mostly cloudy with a low around 38 and becoming calm after midnight. Wednesday, a chance of showers after noon, partly sunny with a high near 52, light and variable winds. Chance of precipitation, I can speak, is 50%, and the new amounts between a tenth and a quarter of an inch is possible. Wednesday night will be showers likely, mostly cloudy with a low around 41, and the new amounts will be a quarter and a half of an inch possible. Thursday, mostly sunny. Thursday night, partly cloudy. New Year's Day will be mostly sunny with a high near 41. And New Year's Day night, partly cloudy with a low around 27.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program, no drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Welcome. This is Mental Health Matters. This is NAMI's Hour. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and we're on the air courtesy of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. There is a NAMI chapter in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the Union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no office. We work out of our houses, use our own phones, etc. We have no paid staff or anything like that. And what we try to do is try to help families and people who have a mental health issue. We do it in various ways. We teach a class called Family to Family for people who are caregivers and supportive people for loved ones who have a mental health issue. Or it doesn't have to be blood relative. It could be your next door neighbor or somebody you work with. We also have support groups. Everything we do is free. There is no charge for anything that we do. And we try to help people either get the services that they require or need and better have the caregivers or parents, whatever the case may be, better understand what their loved one or the person they care about is going through. And if you have to, you can reach out to us. It's 908-284-0500. We check that line at least twice a day. And if we're in don't get back to you right away. We'll get back to you guaranteed by the next day. So we are very privileged to have with us today, I hope I said the name right, Susie Gookin.
Yes.
I said it right. All right. I pat myself on the back. Susie is a teacher, a musician, and someone who is dealing with PTSD and a traumatic brain injury. Now, Susie's been on before, and I just couldn't wait to have her back on because she is an inspiration to many. And I think, you know, whether she likes to admit it or not, she is. But she's, you know, wouldn't admit it because, you know, it would take, you know, patting herself on the back, and she doesn't do that. But I would ask her if you would just briefly describe how you received your traumatic brain injury and as a result the PTSD that came with it.
Sure. I was injured about 15 years ago. I was 20 years old, and I was in two car accidents that were about 2 months apart. And in each of the accidents, I didn't have any external physical injuries, but I had I was diagnosed with two concussions that left long-term damage. And after the first accident, I thought I was okay. I was actually able to go home, and I got up and played a concert the next day and was functioning okay. I was in shock, but I thought I was okay, but started to develop headache, feeling a little bit strange, but assured that I was fine. Mm-hmm. But by the next day, I was slurring my speech and having some short-term memory problems, and the symptoms of the concussion were really setting in. And then 2 months later, I ended up with another car accident. Again, no one else was involved in it. It was just a freak accident on the highway, and it must have hit my head again, and it left a series of short-term issues as well as long-term issues. Because as a result of the brain injuries, I discovered that have long-term memory loss. So I actually don't remember anything of my life prior to age 20. So I've been dealing with the long-term damage of that as well as some other different kinds of issues.
That's got to be tough.
Brain injury.
You know, not remembering, you know, like childhood or, you know,
right.
Christmas is when you were 10 or whatever the case may
sure.
be. I can't imagine what it's like. So I you know, and let me ask you, if say like someone in your family says, oh, Susie, you know, this happened when you were 14. Do you remember it then?
No.
No,
there's
you don't.
No recollection. I can, because I now have 15 years of memory to work with, I know what memory feels like. I know how mm-hmm. it operates. I know what recall feels like. There's nothing there. I know a lot. I can tell you a lot from being a kid, but it's stored as new information.
Right.
The brain is
right.
remarkable like that. So I can tell you that I was a ballerina as a kid, but I don't have any recall or memory
you don't remember of
that. Of
it.
Right.
Yeah.
I just know it as a new set of information.
That's, you know, that's, I can't imagine what that must be like. That's gotta be stressful, not remembering things that happened to you the first 20 years of your life. You know, I mean, I can only imagine that's gotta be stressful. And it, didn't you tell me that the accident basically was the cause of the brain trauma was because of the shock and the head going forward and back?
Sure. We suspect that I may have hit my head on the headrest, but because I don't have any memory of it actually happening, we do know that the force of the brain hitting the front of the skull and the back of the skull left an impact.
Right, right. And, you know, it's just... I don't know. It just seems to me that to go on with your life the way you have is an inspiration, you know, and it really is. And it's, you know, an inspiration to me, I'll tell you, because I don't know that I would react the same way. I don't know that I wouldn't be all ticked off. You know, I'm serious. You know, that's the way I am. Ask my wife. But, you know, it just... amazing, I feel, that, you know, you've gone and found an avenue that you can pursue teaching, music, helping others, which you're doing just
sure.
by being here. And you also, someone told you, I guess, from what I understand, told you that you could reach out to veterans. And you said, well, I'm not a veteran. And they said, yeah, but a lot of them have the same thing you do,
sure,
which is traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress.
Right.
So you want to just briefly explain that? Where did you go and how did you get into it?
I come from a military family, but I'm not 100% sure how I ended up out at Joint Base McGuire-Dix Lakehurst. I don't know what put me out there, but I ended up out there. I volunteered with the USO first, and I would help with just feeding the troops coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. And some of the troops were coming through looking pretty glazed over in their eyes. We know that 1,000-yard stare.
Right.
And these were the people that were gravitating to me. And I would just kind of talk with them as I was, you know, giving them their food. And the conversations would become longer and longer. And some of the Vietnam vets that were there were paying attention to me, noticing my ability to talk with these guys. And they asked me to come over to the medical hold with them because they would go over once a week just to support morale,
mm-hmm,
for the troops that were, you know, had medical issues coming back or, right, or mental health issues, things like that. And they invited me to go, and I was eager to go. I wasn't sure what I was walking into, but I went with them and found myself pretty at home with the troops. At first, I was shy to tell what had happened to me or the path that I was kind of walking. But as I was talking to them, they started to tell me more and more. And then they would ask, well, why am I telling you all this stuff? I don't even tell anybody these things,
right,
but I'm sitting here talking with you and I'm telling you all these things that happened to me. Why are you listening? Why is this okay? What do you know that you're so patient and other people aren't? And I would say, well, I kind of have something going on myself. And I would start to tell them, and they wanted to know more. And
you sure it wasn't because you're an attractive young woman?
Well, listen, you know, if that's what brought them over to come and sit and talk with me, they found out there was more going on to me than that.
I'm just saying, yeah.
Well, if that got them through the door, well, that's okay, too.
Yeah, you know, I'm just saying, you know, what brought them over? Well, you're a very attractive young woman. That's what brought them over, but, you know.
But that isn't what makes them talk.
No, exactly. I know exactly what you're saying.
They have to know that the ears that are listening are trustworthy, and they have to know that there's compassion. And beyond that, they knew there was no judgment coming from me,
mm-hmm,
and I knew there was no judgment coming from them.
Right.
They didn't look at my injuries or my situation and say, oh, well, you didn't go to war. You're not worthy of that. They actually said the opposite. They said, it doesn't matter that you didn't go to war. You're saying the same things that we are, and you're describing it in much the same way. And many of them through the years, even now, I run into veterans who say, you know, you're just like one of us. And they look out for me just like I look out for them.
Sure. And it's understandable. You know, it's kind of, I don't know, I may have told you this before, but a woman called me one time and she said her son just came back from Iraq and Afghanistan. I did two tours over there. And he just stayed in his room, wouldn't come out or anything. And he wouldn't talk to her. And she said, I try to talk to him and blah, blah, blah. I said, well, maybe he'll talk to me. She said, well, what makes you think? I said, because I'm a vet. She said, well, you're not from Iraq. No, but it doesn't matter. A vet is a vet.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And so he got on the phone with me and we talked. And right now he's going to Lyons Hospital for, you know, treatment.
Sure.
He lives up in that area. And so, you know, it's just... And it's the same thing with you. I mean, you suffer from the same traumatic brain injuries that a lot of the veterans that you deal with have. Also, they have post-traumatic stress.
Right.
A lot of them, and you have that also. So when
right.
you're talking to them, you're talking from the same level that they're on.
Yes.
You know, it's not. You know, seeing combat isn't the primary force there.
Right. That's
it's
true.
That you have the same type of things going on as they do.
Right.
And you can talk about it from the same perspective as they can, you
yeah.
know. And that's what's so great. And I think it's awesome that you're helping the vets, and more people should, you know.
Right.
They really should. I know the holiday season, which we're in the middle of, it can be, you know, very hard on folks.
Sure.
Especially if they have to deal with triggers.
Yes.
And just about anything could be a trigger.
Right.
Lights, noise, whatever, you know. Would you elaborate on that?
Sure.
If you could, please.
The holidays, whether it be this time of year or other holidays or even anniversaries throughout the year, serve as reminders of many things. Sometimes it can be reminders of people who are no longer with us. But also there's a lot of pressure and stress that goes into feeling like you have to celebrate in the way that the rest of the world does. Whether that world is your community or your family or your friends or just the environment that you're in. And triggers come in many forms. Like you said, there's lights and there's noise and there's those kinds of triggers, but there's also the societal kinds of triggers that are there. The holidays are building. There's more momentum just around you energetically. But there's also, like I said, that pressure to be a certain way. The holidays might be celebrated a certain way in your family or maybe in your community, and it's hard for you to participate in the same way as everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
You don't feel the same kind of jolly, as the way I've described it, as other people do. Many people with PTSD that I've met, including myself, generally dread holidays coming up because you feel that pressure building. You know you're going to be maybe in a crowded house with a lot of people. You feel closed in. Maybe you know you're going to be exposed to a lot of noise, a lot of things that you can't control or predict.
Right.
And that's where the triggers can really be a problem, because if you're not sure what's coming from what angle, and it's really disconcerting, and it puts you on edge.
And it's like that for a lot of people. It's like that for people with mental health issues.
Absolutely.
Too. Because if they can't control the situation that they're in, it's not that they want to control the whole thing, but if they can't control the situation they're in, then it's very, they get very anxious.
Yes.
And the anxiety level rises.
Right.
And a lot of times, well, I know from, you know, my own experience with my youngest son, a lot of times, a lot of people, he'd go in his room.
Right.
You know.
Right.
He'd eat breakfast. He'd eat, you know, dinner, and then he'd be gone. He'd be in his room, you know.
Yeah.
And I didn't quite understand that until I got involved with NAMI and the whole thing. And now, you know, yeah, I understand why. Now, he doesn't do it as anymore, but he did, you know, for many years.
Right.
And I can understand why, you know.
Right. And that avoidance is part of it, too. And that's very easily misunderstood.
Yes.
Because it can seem like maybe you don't care, or maybe you're not interested, or, you know, for some, you know, looking from the opposite perspective, people can think it's because you don't love them or don't care about them. But the way that I've always talked about it, is that it's, in my case with post-traumatic stress, it's not personal. These responses and reactions that I have, they're not personal. They're not towards anyone. They're not, They're not an external force, mm-hmm. even though we know that triggers can be external. It's something going on inside that I have to kind of work through and use the tools that I know to work through it.
Mm-hmm.
So my need to pull back or step out of an environment is never about anyone else.
Right.
It's about me kind of dealing with me.
Right.
But I think that that's often misunderstood. And it's something I've heard about a lot from the troops, too. You know, they don't feel good about themselves when they are with their families and they don't they can't celebrate the way that everyone else can. They don't feel good about that. They don't, they're not necessarily choosing it. It's not something they feel that they have control over. And it brings up a lot of shame and a lot of guilt.
Sure.
So even in that avoidance and pulling away, now they're still dealing with some pretty dark feelings and other types of issues. So, you know, taking yourself out of the situation certainly eliminates one set of triggers, but now you're dealing with the aftermath of it, and you're dealing with a whole different set of issues that are now being built up and triggered.
Yeah, like, well, with like veterans, if they're, if they have young children or younger children, families, you know, kids are all excited about the holidays and, you know, Santa or whatever, or even if they don't believe in Santa, they the gifts, you know, and stuff, and, you know, and it can be stressful.
Sure.
You know, and it can be stressful for the average person.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, hey, oh, God, you know, like, isn't it over yet?
Right.
But, you know, but it's, when you were talking, you know, we were talking about triggers. I know someone who was doing very well, and nobody, or his family, never realized he had any problem till he lost his best pen. That was his trigger. And, you know, it's, you're saying, well, really? Yeah, that's what triggered it. You know, maybe down the road it would have been something else.
Right.
But at that point in time and that point in his life, that's what it was. And, you know, there can be all sorts of triggers.
Absolutely.
I know someone who was with her husband in a car. And he, the husband was driving. She was in the front seat. And somebody, I don't know, was a van or a truck or whatever, either ran a stop sign or ran a red light and broadsided him. The husband died in her arms. She will not get in a car under any circumstances.
Sure.
You know. And you say, well, really? Yeah. Well, it is a traumatic, you know, experience.
Yeah.
And unless you've had one, I don't think people fully realize what causes, you know, what the cause of it, it could be, you know.
Yeah, and I think, too, it's challenging because I think sometimes from the other side, there's an assumption that you can control your reaction to things. But reactions are... they're coming from a place inside of us of fear and of danger and lack of safety. So they are quick responses. They are, I guess, gut responses to things, or reactions, I should say, is the word I was looking for, reactions. But to be able to respond is something you need to learn how to do. And that's something that I have had to learn how to do, as opposed to reacting. You know, and like you said earlier, you don't know if you could have handled things the way that I have. But there was a point in time where I was very angry. And I wanted this to just be fixed.
Yeah.
And it was very hard for about 10 years. And it really wasn't until I've, you know, the later stages of me being out at the base that that kind of shifted. But it wasn't something I felt I had control over. And it makes it very difficult because, again, from the outside, many of the people that I know with PTSD, we've all run into at least one or two people who said, well, why don't you just do something different? Well, that's great, but it's not that easy. There's no on switch.
Right.
There's no off switch. It's our brain has been training this pathway of fear, and it doesn't just turn off. It has to be trained by training the other side of the the other part of the nervous system to learn what safety is, because we really don't know what that safety feels like. There's a constant low level of anxiety that's constantly rolling along inside of us. That's always kind of there. It's always kind of alert, you know, watching and scanning. And then there's that higher level that's like, I'm in danger now. And you get reactive and the anger kicks up and you can go from 0 to 60 in moments.
Right.
And then you deal with the aftermath of that, realizing, well, why did that happen? Why couldn't I do something about that? And it's, you know, it's hard.
Right. Right.
It can be hard to deal with.
We, in NAMI, deal with a lot of families who don't quite understand the entire scope of the mental health issue.
Sure.
And they'll say to their, well, it could be a son or daughter or loved one, whoever, you know, oh, get over it. Mm-hmm. Get up. Get out, get a job. You know, quit sighing around the house all day. And it's not that the person doesn't want to get up, doesn't want to go out and get a job, doesn't want to not hear, you know, people saying, you know, get over it and yada, yada. But it's that they physically can't at that point in time.
Right.
But the people, their loved ones, don't quite understand that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like I always, well, I don't know. I when I teach the family-to-family course, a lot of times I'll say that mothers are like bears.
Mm-hmm.
They hug their cubs close, keep them close, you know. Fathers, in a lot of cases, oh, it's broke, I'll fix it. Oh, the window's cracked, I can fix that, I can replace that. Oh, the car won't start, I'll fix the car. But they don't get that they can't fix mental illness.
Right.
You know, or a lot of the other issues, you know.
Right.
They can't fix traumatic brain injury or, you know, things like that, or post-traumatic stress. But they feel that, oh, it's broke, I can fix it. Well, that's not the case.
Right.
And a lot of times it takes them a long time to get to the point where they understand that.
Sure.
And understanding it is one thing, accepting it is something else.
Yes, that's true.
And, you know, a lot of times they'll understand it, but they don't accept it.
Right.
Or vice versa, actually, in another case, you know, they'll accept it, but they don't understand it. You know?
Yeah.
And it's tough because if you don't have support, regardless of whether it's family, whether it's helping other people and they in turn help you, it can be a really bad struggle.
Yes.
You know.
And, you know, the thing that really helped me, too, is understanding what's going on in my brain. Understanding, right, in basic terms, what's operating up there when I would get upset? What is actually happening up there? And being able to understand that if I can understand what's happening when I'm getting angry or getting upset, then what should be happening when I feel calm and safe, and learning how to understand those processes
mm-hmm.
better.
Mm-hmm.
And that has really helped me, because you can't climb over PTSD. It's, you know, we think of it like this mountain that just doesn't go away. You can't climb over it.
Right.
You know, it's still there. And it's going to be with me for the rest of my life. This is going to be my traveling buddy. This is just kind of how it is. So I've had to learn to move through it. I can't push it out of the way. I can't stomp on it. I can't climb over it. So I have to move kind of through it. So those things that come up that act as triggers, or the things that scare me, or things that get me upset, I have to learn to kind of move towards them and recognize mm-hmm. them. And try to figure out, okay, well, what's happening when I have that experience?
Right.
And trying to use it as a way to educate myself, as opposed to what I used to do was beat myself up over it. Because it's very easy when you have post-traumatic stress to look at yourself as being much smaller than you really are. And like I've told a lot of the troops that I've come in contact with, all of those skills that they have built up and trained and used to be good soldiers, strong Marines, airmen, whatever it is that their role mm-hmm. is, all of those skills can still benefit them in dealing with their PTSD. Those skills, those tools, those values, all of those things still exist inside of them.
Right.
They just have to start using them in a little different way. You know, those powers of, you know, strategic thinking, you know, being able to notice that something triggered them and take notes on it, write it down, you know, keep track of what it is what's happening to you, and just kind of keep a little logbook of it, just like you
know what the triggers are.
Yeah. You know, start to be able to notice what's happening rather than allowing the chaos to just keep being chaos.
Right.
It starts to give some order to the chaos, and it's one of the tools that I used, because at some point it just occurred to me that maybe I'm not here to suffer.
Right.
And I kind of questioned that because I thought, well, prior to that, well, this was just my lot in life. This is just what PTSD is. So this is just what my life is. Well, no, that's not the case. And I think this is now proof of it. That really wasn't the case. We are not here to just simply suffer. I think that people with PTSD, veterans in particular, carry a lot of wisdom, a lot of an abundance of experience that we can all use and learn from. There, you know, the power to be able to move through challenges and difficulties, all those skills are there. They just have to adapt them and start to look at them in a little different way. And I believe there's hope. And there's a lot of people out there doing a lot of good work to try to help with a lot of different kinds of tools, because it's certainly not a quick fix. But
I
believe that all those skills that are in them can be used in just in a new way to help them move through it with support and guidance. And
do you have support from your family?
I do.
Well, that's great.
I do.
It's good because in a lot of cases, people don't.
Right.
You know, and then it's a little more. I'm not saying it's easier when you have support, but it is a little helpful if you have support. If you have no one, you know, no family or any, and a lot of people don't.
Right.
So it's great that they go have things that, you know, like support groups or whatever the case may be to go to and get support that they may not have at home. You know?
And that's where I think the education really comes in too. You know, my path with recognizing just how much was wrong with my brain and with the behaviors that I was noticing, just being able to research things and to look things up and to say, you know what, this can't be right. Something is not right here. And the more I said something was not right here, the more it made me go looking for answers. So sometimes I looked up things online and I didn't like what I found. Sometimes I didn't like looking at that stuff, but it was helpful. And I just kind of kept track of things that way. And it took time. You know, it took a long time.
And, you know, it's, how do we say it? In a lot of cases, it's a daily thing. You know, for lack of a better word, it's a daily situation, and, you know, some days are great and some days aren't so great, you know. But to know how to handle the days that aren't so great is a plus, you know. What about relationships, you know, with others? And that's got to be difficult, too, I would think.
Absolutely. And I think we hear a lot about that, whether it be friendships or romantic relationships or family relationships, they're all challenging when you have post-traumatic stress in particular. It's hard to describe what's going on inside of you. There's a reluctance to talk about what it is that you're feeling because a lot of times it's hard to put into words. It's only been in the recent few years that I've been able to articulate all of this. And there's a lot of pushing and pulling that goes on, because families are fearful. They're fearful of you pulling away from them. They're fearful that they can't help you. They can't stop this. They want you to be the way that you were before. But to me, there is no way I was before and the way I am now. Because the way I perceive it now is that this is a constant evolution. This is a constantly evolving person. So whatever my experiences are or whatever your experiences are, we're all kind of evolving on our own path. So my abundance of experience or maybe a surface member's abundance of experience can be looked at as negative because it may have triggered post-traumatic stress. But the experiences of those around us who maybe have a lack of experience in the world or lack of experience in their life can be just as problematic because there might be a different level of wisdom there, or maybe more of a possibly a more of a narrower perception of how the world actually operates and what's right. available to us or what's not available to us or how we should be or how we shouldn't be. I think that we can't all fit in the same box. So
no,
in my eyes, we have
all.
To build a new box.
Right.
we have to come with new things together.
But I think, what's the word? Expectations of people, sometimes can cause problems.
Yes, you know? That's true.
You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, sure. You know, there are very heavy expectations. And oftentimes, as someone with PTSD, you know what they are. You know what you're being expected to be. You know what you're being expected to behave like. You can see them. But you know you can't meet them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's the anxiety of that.
Right.
Of knowing that you can't ever be what other people want you to be. So how do you arrive at some level of acceptance inside yourself if you know you can't ever meet these expectations that are beyond you?
Yeah, but what other people expect you to be isn't your expectation per se. Mm-hmm. It may be totally different.
That's true.
You know, and it's your life, so you have to go by your expectations. You know, yeah, it's nice if you can fulfill some of the expectations of people, you know, around you, but it's not necessarily a have-to-be situation. You know what I'm saying? It's
sure.
like, you know, if your expectations differ from your sister's or whatever, well, so be it, you know, because you each have your own lives to live, you know.
Right.
And you each have to deal with whatever's going on in your life at that time. I mean, they may not have PTSD, but they may be having a marriage that isn't going as well as they
you
thought
got it.
Or something, you know, whatever. Right. So, you know, I don't know if you have a sister and their marriage isn't good. I'm just saying that. I'm using it as an example.
I know,
okay?
I know.
I'm only,
it's
you
okay.
know, don't take it personally. But you know, it's true because... You know, I can't tell you how many times parents have said, my son was in college and now he dropped out because of this illness. And why can't we just fix it and send him back to school? Well, you know, first of all, we can't fix it.
Right.
You know, we can treat it. And there's a lot of famous people going around that have a mental health issue.
Yeah.
Which PTSD falls under, you know,
right.
But, you know, I mean, I give, with this other woman, I give a monthly presentation to educational services. And we always start out with a PowerPoint of these screen of all these famous people. And there's a couple that always boggle my mind, you know, Winston Churchill,
mm-hmm.
you know. Carried England on his back for 7 years during the Second World War, suffered from major depression. Buzz Aldrin walked on the moon as an astronaut.
Right.
Suffers from major depression. You know, and it's just things like that. You look at that, you know, not everybody's going to be an astronaut. Not everybody's going to be the Prime Minister of England or the President of the United States. But you can go on with your life.
Yes.
You know, and you may have to alter it a little bit, but you still can live a full life.
Right.
And, you know, and be happy in it.
Yes, that's true.
You know.
That is true. And it's, like I said, it's a constantly evolving path. And it's one you have to come to own.
Right.
And it's taken some time, but I know that it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, I do what I do now.
Sure.
Because I have kind of come through it. And it, like I said, PTSD will always be with me. This is just the way it is.
Right.
But I've learned to kind of walk next to it rather than allowing it to sit on my shoulders and define me.
Mm-hmm.
I get to define me and I get to choose how I would like to move forward.
Right.
And those choices are made daily.
Absolutely. And, you know, you have to make choices sometimes that maybe in another situation you wouldn't make, but you know, sometimes you have to do what you don't like, you know, yeah, to get through the day or week or whatever, you know.
Sure.
So with that, we have to take a quick break. You're listening to Mental Health Matters, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With 3 great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and we're very privileged today to have with us Susie Gookin. Did I say it right?
Yes, you did.
Oh, wow. That's 2 for 2. I'm proud of myself. I got to pat myself on the back for that one. Susie is a teacher and musician and is someone who is dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury. And we've been talking about different things in the holiday season that can trigger problems with people with post-traumatic stress or any type of mental health issues of sorts. But I wanted to mention before we got any further, and we'll come back to some of the triggers, so to speak. But Susie wrote a book. Susie, and I read it, and it was awesome. Why don't you talk about it and give them the title and all that, and you know, and how you came about writing it, and so on and so forth.
Sure. The book is called The Camouflaged Heart, and it's about my experiences with traumatic brain injury and my path of discovering what was wrong and the symptoms that showed up in the beginning and the whole process of discovery of how to get through all of this, how I was able to function. And also it coincides with the experiences I had with the soldiers out at Joint Base McGuire-Dix-Lakehurst. I volunteered out there for over 8 years at the medical hold and a couple of years with the USO. And I learned a lot from the soldiers' experiences coming back from the war. And we realized that there was some common ground between my TBIs and PTSD and what they were going through. So it shares the experiences and talks about the you know, the civilian perspective as mm-hmm. well as some of the military perspective and the wisdom I gained from them.
What gave you the idea to write a book?
Well, it wasn't my idea, I can tell you that. The many conversations I had with the soldiers out there just talking about what happened to me and my experiences, many of them said to me, you should really write a book. And I said, no, that's okay, thanks. I don't really want to talk about it with anybody except you guys. And I would just brush it off. And then more of them would say it to me. And then I was meeting with veterans in other places, just out and about and traveling and things like that. And we would get talking about our quote-unquote war stories, even though I had never been to war. But we were sharing our traumatic experiences.
Right.
And
right.
They would say, you know, you should really write a book. And I'd say, you know, I've been told that at least a dozen times before. And then finally, when I started to really get into researching things, I realized that there was something to be shared here. And at the time, a new commander had come to the WTU, which is the Warrior Transition Unit at Fort Dix, or the former Warrior Transition Unit. And she and I kind of hit it off chatting, and she said, you know, I'd really love for you to come in and do a formal presentation for my soldiers. She said, you're the expert on what happened to you, and I think what you know and the way you talk about it can really help people. And at first, again, I was like, no, that's okay. I don't know about that. Let me think about it. You know, because I was used to just sitting with the soldiers and just kind of palling around and chatting informally. I didn't really ever think about doing something formal. So, That February, I put together a formal presentation about what happened to me and put it into a PowerPoint presentation and did the presentation for the enlisted troops. And then it went over very well. And I was asked back to teach the NCOs and then, of course, the officers and the doctors. And by the end, they were saying to me, you should really write a book. And I think when you have a lieutenant colonel telling you you should write a book, I think that sent the message home. And then that next weekend, I woke up 6 o'clock in the morning this day. I remember very clearly. And I thought, oh, my gosh, that outline was the outline for a book. So I typed for 6 hours and 14 chapters later, I had a book. So that's where it came from.
Awesome.
It wasn't the lifelong endeavor to become an author or anything like that. It wasn't even the desire to tell the story. It was the troops telling me, you have something here that can help people. And
sure,
that was motivation
absolutely.
Enough for me to get past my fears of doing it and my issues with telling the story.
Right, right. And, you know, giving presentations, as formal as they may be, can be informal.
Yes. And I can be a little like that.
You know, no, seriously, because, you know, you're talking to people. And someone a long, long time ago told me, when you're giving a presentation, there's always, for every one you give, there's always three. The one you practiced, the one you give, and the one you wish you gave.
Yes.
And the only one that's important is the middle one, the one you gave.
Right.
Because nobody else knows about the other two.
Yes.
You know. So, and that has stuck with me because, we do presentations. And in fact, coming up in the 23rd of January, we've been asked to talk to the Princeton Seminary for Presbyterian ministers and deacons mm-hmm. and so on and so forth about mental health issues and
right.
so on and so forth. You know, so this other lady and I are going to do this presentation. And, you know, it's an hour and 15 minutes worth. You know, that's what they want. But it's, you know, we're going to try to keep it as informal as possible, but formal, but informal, if you know
right.
what I mean.
Sure.
You know, but that's great. And, you know, I'll tell you what, if you get other offers, take them up because you're awesome.
Thank you.
Seriously. You know, I mean, it's just like us talking. You're giving a presentation with us talking.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and who knows how many people out there are listening.
Well, don't tell me that. I don't like crowds.
Not to put you on a spot or anything, but I figured I'd just throw that out there. When you're learning to cope with, you know, in the sad, quiet moments or whatever, what do you use as a helping mechanism?
Those moments can be very challenging because they can be deafening.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense.
Yes.
There's a lot of contradictory language that goes along with post-traumatic stress. But, you know, journaling has never been something I've been fond of. But occasionally that can be helpful to write out how you're feeling so that it's kind of like allowing it to come out of your brain and to do something mm-hmm. productive. But also I use meditation. Meditation is by no means any kind of quick fix. But usually the brain is running rampant when it comes to those quiet moments. Like I said, they can be deafening. There's a lot of loud negative thoughts that come up,
right.
a lot of self-defeat, questions of self-worth, a lot of things that are really about kind of being your own enemy. And the meditation is a tool that's always available to me anytime of the day, at any moment, where I can sit and say to all of the chaotic thoughts, I hear you, I see you, I know you're there, but you're not going to be my focus for right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I use a mantra, and a mantra is just simply a word. It's really nothing fancy. It can be any word. It can be snowball if you want it to be. It can be any word you want, but
right.
you use that as a focus, and that's what I use. You know, you can use the word peace and trying to get myself to connect back with my body, because many times the thoughts are so big, and the more you think them, the bigger they get, and it's like the monsters just keep getting bigger and bigger until you're so small. So sitting in meditation helps me to kind of build myself back up, connecting to my breathing, getting myself reconnected to my body. And when you're able to connect into the breathing, it connects into your nervous system, and
mm-hmm.
it does help to calm me down,
right.
lowering the heart rate, bringing the blood pressure down, because we know all of those things rise when you're under
mm-hmm.
stress.
Sure.
And negative thoughts can create, you know,
right.
the rapid heart rate and things
right.
like that make us more stressed. So instead of subscribing to the pathway of the negative thinking, I let it know that I see it, I hear it, it's there. But for this moment, I'm going to make a conscious effort to connect in to the
mm-hmm.
the quiet space. And
it okay.
doesn't mean the thoughts go away. They're still
no.
there.
No.
But it's, I see you, but my focus is here.
Right.
And it's using that strategic thinking
right.
and to consciously try to combat it.
That's awesome, actually. You know, in our 3 minutes that we have left,
mm-hmm.
why don't you give the name of your book and how people can get it if they so desire, and an email address or something if somebody wanted to reach out to you that they
sure.
could. Okay.
Sure. The book is called The Camouflaged Heart, and you can get it on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, as well as BalboaPress.com. And my email address is peacefulwarriormeditation@yahoo.com.
Okay, peaceful warrior I can get it. Why don't you say it again? Because I'm okay. Stumbling over it.
peacefulwarriormeditation@yahoo.com.
Okay. I have to tell you, Susie, that I can't thank you enough for being here. And we will have you back again, you know, because I think that what you're doing is awesome, because you're not only helping others, you're helping a group that I have a special attachment to, you know, vets. So I think that, you know, it's awesome that you're doing that. And I think that, you know, whether you know it or not, you're helping people, you know, and by helping others, sometimes you may be helping yourself also,
sure.
You know, by helping others. And it makes you feel good that, you know, this is going to take place or that's going to take place. But so therefore, you know, you're helping yourself along with others.
Right.
And I think that's awesome. Cool. I really do.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
You know, and we will be back next week. In the meantime, I want you all to remember that you have a wonderful, safe, healthy new year. And we will be back again next week. And remember, folks, mental health really does matter. See you next week.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
People, what they told us is smoking in video games makes your character look cool, more powerful, the more important characters smoke.
This is very concerning because of how popular video games are with kids. Koval says 56% of young people play video games every single day. As parents get requests to buy video games for a holiday gift, they need to do more than just look at the packaging. Of the most popular video games, 8% have a warning about the smoking imagery on the packaging, but actually 42% contain smoking imagery.
Parents need to do a little bit more research, talk to their kids, take a look at these games while their kids are playing them to really understand what's in them.
I'm Ron Taylor, and you're listening to USA Radio News.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HuntertonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.